Hello and welcome to today's episode of Nucleus Investment Insights. Today we're going to discuss the ongoing energy crisis in Australia. We've been talking about this a lot recently, and the consensus is there's multiple solutions available and the public voice is getting louder. We're going to ask the question whether the Albanese government is going to step up to the plate and do something about it, or whether they're going to hide under the cover of excuses. Firstly, on the agenda, we'll look at global prices and how they're still extremely elevated and there's no relief in sight for the East Coast. Next, we'll examine the damning ACCC report of the national electricity market. Then we'll look to see if there's actually any progress on the solutions. And as always, at the end, we'll discuss the investment implications. My name's Sam Kerr, and I'm the Senior Financial Advisor at Nucleus Wealth. Today, as always, I want to welcome the founder and chief investment officer at Nucleus Wealth, Damien Klassen.
Sam, how you going?
Good, thanks. And we also have our chief strategist, David Llewellyn-Smith. Dave, thanks for joining us as well.
Pleasure, Sam. Great to be here.
Excellent. Thanks, gentlemen. So just a quick reminder before we get started. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and click the bell below to be notified when we go live or have a new episode recorded. Alternatively, you can follow us on your preferred podcast platform. Our show's available on all the majors. And if you'd like to see the slides in more detail, we'll post them in the show notes this afternoon. And you can also view these at nucleuswealth.com/webinars. So now we've got that housekeeping out of the way. Dave, I'll hand it over to you to lead us away.
Actually, I might jump in really quickly first, Sam, and then sure. It's pretty much going to be the Dave show for most of this. I guess the question is why do we keep coming back to this topic, in the recent months? And the real key reason why is, the world's going through this inflation push at the moment and trying to work out how real is the inflation, how long is it going to last, are we going to start seeing inflation roll over as these energy prices roll over, and the real issue for Australia is if it doesn't sort out its problems with energy, and in particular the wholesale energy costs that are coming through at sort of five times what they used to be, then Australia could see an elongated version of this inflation. And what that might mean is that it may mean the RBA then stays more hawkish for longer than other central banks, and that actually puts Australia in a worse position than if they sort it out and we actually start to see inflation falling and give the RBA cover to drop rates more quickly. So in terms of the issues for Australian investors, this is pretty close to top of the list, and it's something where we know there are solutions, but we're highly dependent upon governments, and so it's all about reading the tea leaves and trying to work out on the day-to-day basis where does it look like it's at, and because it's depending upon which direction it goes could make a big difference to your investments in Australia. So anyway, with that as a sort of intro, I'll lead across to Dave, who's been sort of on a number of different channels recently, sort of talking up his view, and I guess with that idea that he's been talking about this for years, and finally we have an ACCC result come out with a report that's basically vindicated what he's been saying for the last sort of decade, David.
Yeah, about that. I should just note quickly that I completely agree with Damien's summary that this is vital to understand for your asset allocation at the moment, and that importance is only matched by the generalized silence that you get in the press about it. So it's a pretty strange setup. So where are we? Basically, global gas and coal prices have driven the local prices crazy because we have these energy cartels that bring home international prices, even though we dig up this stuff really cheaply locally. There's been no relief in global prices, either for LNG or coal. Every time Russia turns off another tap, we just see another leg higher, or they're sustained at very high plateaus. And we're actually moving towards a very high risk period for this with the European or Northern Hemisphere winter, when both gas and coal demand are going to rise, and North Asian winter, of course. But you know, this puts Europe in particular in a very vulnerable position vis-a-vis its conflict with Russia. If Russia decides to squeeze this even more, which they probably will, European gas storage, which is the critical input, has been rising in a seasonally consistent way with previous years. They've managed to source gas largely from the US and its LNG exports to replace lost Russian volumes. However, that's obviously driven the price pretty wild. And even so, Europe has this large store of gas that it looks like it will be sufficient as they enter winter. But if Russia were to curtail gas supplies to Europe during winter or cut them off, that storage only lasts kind of 3 or 4 weeks. So if Russia would go all in and cut it off, then Europe would actually run out of gas relatively quickly, even though it has these large tanks of storage. So it becomes a very high risk period. So global prices are still very high. North Asian LNG is still trading between $40 and $50. Coal's still up. Thermal coal is still up around $400. However, we have seen some relief locally as this issue has gained traction in the press and with the government. And so we've seen the local gas price fall as low as $12 a gigajoule when it's, you know, been as high as $65 in the last few months. And bearing in mind the traditional price is about $4, and before the Ukraine war it was about $8. So we're back down to $16, which is terrific, but of course it's still very high. And as readers or listeners probably realise by this point, gas sets the marginal cost of electricity in the national electricity market as well. And so I've just provided a chart here showing you the recent movement in electricity prices as we've seen this gas price relief. Then in lockstep, electricity prices have come off a fair bit as well. Nonetheless, they're still at prices that would result in a doubling of utility bills over the next 12 months for households. Business will be you know, similar if they're on short-term contracts, but a lot of them are on longer term, so that will roll out over a little longer period. However, they're more exposed to wholesale prices. So, you know, it may take longer, but it'll actually be even worse for business. That's our basic sort of wrap-up of prices and markets as they stand today. What is kind of one other thing that I should add, of course, is that why has the price fallen here? Well, that's a really interesting question. We've had this, you know, sort of groundswell of protest from the ACCC, the discussion in the press, some discussion from the government. And so, you know, it's probably gaming by the cartel to some extent, lowering the price to take the heat out of the issue. But it also is very convenient for them because one of the six LNG trains on Curtis Island in Queensland, which are the export facilities that have tightened the local market, one of them is offline for maintenance. So they've suddenly got plenty of gas to throw the rest of us, and it's pretty convenient for them to do so when everybody's, you know, when the red mist is kind of settling over the political economy. So we wanted to take a quick look at this damning ACCC report, which, frankly, I could have written myself. It was that good and damning of the cartel behaviour. So what we're going to do is just quickly roll a terrific segment from Alan Kohler on the ABC, which summarised the report. It's just 2 minutes long, and it really just wraps it up in a nutshell. So, Sam, if you want to roll that.
Last week, the ACCC published a damning report about Australia's gas crisis, summing up the problem with two charts.
First, the regulator is forecasting the demand for gas will exceed supply next year by 56 petajoules. So that's 2037 petajoules versus supply of 1981. And second, there's a rather shocking graph that shows that LNG exporters are taking gas from the domestic market rather than supplying it. According to the ACCC, the amount being taken out by exporters will reach 57.6 petajoules next year. And by the way, a petajoule is 1 billion joules. That's quite a lot of joules. But buried deep in the ACCC's Gas Inquiry Interim Report is another chart that rather gets to the heart of the problem.
Five businesses control 83% of Australia's East Coast gas resources, almost entirely in Queensland. If you add the extra influence they have through joint ventures, that rises to 139%. And finally, if you add their influence through exclusivity arrangements, that is, deals that commit a producer to sell to only one buyer, then it rises to 163%. Of course, you can't own more than 100% of something, but what this chart shows you is that these five companies and joint ventures have got Australia's gas wrapped up very tight indeed. And the result of that is shown by this chart on page 120. That is, price versus cost. The price has gone up tenfold in 18 months, while the cost has remained the same. That is, not much. Their profit margins have exploded. As everyone keeps saying, there's plenty of gas.
What that series of charts from the ACCC shows is that the gas companies are behaving like a cartel. But of course they are. It's what they do. As Adam Smith wrote in The Wealth of Nations almost 250 years ago, people of the same trade seldom meet together, even for merriment or diversion, but the conversation ends in a conspiracy against the public or some contrivance to raise prices. So it's no good asking them nicely to stop it.
Okay, so there are a couple of vital takeouts from the ACCC report, which is basically the cartel dominates an enormous majority of East Coast reserves. Having assumed that privileged position, the temptation to behave badly has overtaken it, and it's got all sorts of marketing JVs, exclusive right contracts, and other dodgy stuff, that most of which is illegal in the ACCC laws, which are driving the price up. The other critical point to make is that costs for the $5 a gigajoule, even though the price has gone ballistic. So the ACCC has mooted possible criminal prosecutions on the back of this report, and I frankly don't know why they're not undertaking them already. over to the key component of today's discussion. Are we going to see any solutions? Is there any progress? So there are lots of pressure points emerging for the Albanese government. In the recent statement of monetary policy, the RBA had a special breakout box, which it uses when it wants to underline specific issues. And it basically described exactly what we've been arguing for the last few months, and that is that this represents an enormous inflation risk. So, excuse me, so 3.5% of the CPI is made up of utility bills, and even as prices sit today, that is, materially below where they have been, this would still result in those bills doubling. So that gives you 3.5% of extra inflation over the next 12 months. And I thought it was pretty clear that the RBA put it in there as a bit of an SOS to the Albanese government to do something, but we'll have to wait and see. There have been other developments. The Queensland government has essentially gotten out of the way of any possible reservation. It said it would be in favour of it, which matters because, you know, it actually owns the reserves and, excuse me, also, you know, obviously it may affect some of its revenue takings from the gas.
Yeah, and so Dave, just to confirm that, so that's, I mean, I think that's the point that, the gas companies like to sort of push upon this is that, we've got this gas and we've drilled it all up and we're just selling our own gas. But actually the gas is only ever been, is actually owned by the states. The states have their royalties on those and it's only... It's a there's still government owned assets which are sort of being allowed to sell in terms of the legal positioning of it. So from when you sort of this whole part about these companies have done all this stuff, it's like, well, no, the companies are actually, they're allowed to dig up our gas and sell our gas, as a nation.
It doesn't stop them from claiming the gas as their own in the press. So
yes.
So anyway, that is a big step forward if the Queensland government gets out of the way. So that's encouraging that we may see a solution. Other encouraging signs are that, you know, there are a lot of, you know, kind of policy index huggers in the Australian political economy who sort of sniff the wind, and when they sense it swinging in a certain direction, try to jump out in front of it and either save their skins or look prescient. And we've seen a number of those over the last couple of weeks, which suggests, you know, either they're getting some sense that, you know, the policy apparatus is swinging in this direction, and or they just think the rationality of doing something is so overwhelming that the Albanese government will have no choice.
I'd also go as well to say it's a little bit like the Labor Party as well, insofar as you know, come up with their own view is difficult to do, but if it's a parroting the view that you've already got from the ACCC or the RBA or someone like that, then it's a lot easier for people in the press to
absolutely to do that. And we should note that the Albanese government did commission the ACCC to do a special report. This latest damning report was a combined report of its regular update and a special commissioning by Jim Chalmers, the treasurer, to try and get to the bottom of what has gone wrong in our energy markets. So that's obviously another encouraging sign that they're moving to create a groundswell of support, allowing them to do something. But the point is, they're making some very mixed signals, giving off very mixed signals. So we have, on one hand, they've commissioned the ACCC, yet on the other hand, the Resources Minister, Madeleine King, just can't seem to wait to get into the press to defend the cartel. She's appearing regularly and parroting, you know, cartel lobby talking points and discussing constantly the need for industry-led solutions, which you know, is obviously an absurd proposition. Given if you give the lead to a cartel, you end up precisely where we are.
It's worth noting as well, saying, "Oh, we just need to dig up more gas." Is like we're supplying. We're one of the biggest in the world. Like it's world supply. It's basically, can we dig up enough gas to satisfy Europe's desires for gas if it doesn't have Russian gas? Like it's the question. It's not like we just need to produce a little bit more and then everyone in Australia will be happy. It's no, we, the way they're sucking it out, we would need to produce, you know, enough for Europe to get off Russian gas.
Yes, exactly right. So yeah, mixed signals from the government, and I guess this is not necessarily critical, but if the government has also mooted doing some reforms to the existing domestic gas regime, domestic reservation regime, which has proven unable to contain this price shock, that falls under the purview of Madeleine King, who is making all of these, you know, very sympathetic noises to the cartel. If you look at this within the prism of creating a policy frame, a policy environment that enables you to act, then they're doing some good things and some really weird things. They're moving towards doing something, but what will it be? I don't know. You know, they've got three options: an export levy, super profits taxes, or domestic reservation, or some combination of three, or two of the three. I don't know where they're going to go, but given the costs for producing the gas at $5, I've just simply said $7 gigajoule fixed price reservation is the simplest answer. And moreover, that leaves the international profits intact for the miners of the gas. And so, you know, surely that's a negotiable outcome. Even within Australia's horribly corrupted political economy. Will Labor get there? I do not know. That is the rational outcome. Base case may be probably a weaker version of that. I don't know, but it may end up being stronger, and I'm underestimating their policy credibility. So we'll just have to wait and see. I guess they are going to do something. So the base case is definitely that this will get better than it has been. But, you know, how strong will they be is the open question.
And so just to sort of summarise that, I mean, effectively what we've got is a media that's swinging around behind doing something rather than 3 or 4 months ago they were basically saying, no, no, everything's fine, just, you know, it'll all sort itself out, market prices. So the media is sort of swinging behind. You've got an ACCC report giving you lots of cover. You've got I guess the Liberal opposition doesn't seem to be sort of making too much of a noise one way or the other. I don't think, David, is that safe to say? So they'll probably complain about whatever the solution, but, you know, they're certainly not forward running any solution. And then, so probably the biggest negative, though, as you said, is the resources minister seems to be still parroting the lines. So, and I guess the back channel information sort of you're getting is that there's movement, there seems to be movement towards doing something rather than...
And we can see that in what the government's done explicitly as well, but I'm not convinced yet, put it that way. So it's still moot, on how hard they go. I should add in, just to conclude that section, the gas cartel itself is foaming at the mouth, of course, and it's getting some media support from the Australian Financial Review, which has really, you know, just dragged the anchor on this and as well as so many other issues. I might just add, ironically, of course, because if we don't get a fix, then its parent company, Nine, is going to suffer a dramatic fall in profits. So, you know, the cartel is not without support, and so, you know, this is in contest. So shifting over to what it means for investment, as Damo, you know, kind of paraphrased at the beginning, if we don't get a structural solution here, this is just the beginning. This has been a rolling energy crisis for Australia since 2014, and it won't stop, it'll get worse. That was made very clear by the ACCC report. And if you look at the forward forecasts for Australian gas output versus demand, it only gets worse and worse as Bass Strait volumes start to dry up. So this is something that you need to stay on top of if there is no structural solution. Europe is still, for the time being, the marginal price setter. That's probably going to roll for several years, I would think. It's going to take them some time to get off Russian gas, obviously enough. A lot of heavy-duty investment needed in renewables, as well as, you know, reorienting away from gas towards whatever other fuels that they determine they can manage. And so this is at least a medium-term phenomenon, and so it bears watching again.
And noting as well that, you know, Europe's doing a fair bit in the coal front, and that's, you know, we're sort of facing these higher coal prices as well. And so Dave's spoken a lot about the gas, but the coal problem's not going away either, which is not as important for the southern and southern states, but the New South Wales and Queensland very much still very much coal dependent.
Yes, and it's important to note that coal price and the LNG price really just track one another internationally, because essentially they're vying for the same trade. So fixed stationary power fuels. So if one stays high, the other one will automatically as well. So if we don't get a structural solution, the RBA is going to overshoot in rate hikes. And, you know, I think we all can conclude where that leads, especially given we've now seen the peak in US inflation. It will become very destructive very quickly for the Australian economy, because we will get Australian inflation within a couple of months will be above that of the US. It would be extremely poor optic. I expect the Australian dollar would rise into that scenario. So, you know, while our house prices fall and real incomes are hammered backwards as well. So, as you can see, the logic in doing something here is pretty compelling for a new government. That said, they haven't been overly impressive with their courage, shall we say, so far. So,
and also, can I sort of add into there is two extra sort of political issues overlaying that as well. Is one is there's still a lot of cover for them to blame the last guys for it. So, you know, from a purely political, if you're not worried about the outcome for Australia, you just want to make sure that you maximise the pain for the opposition party, then you know, being able to blame this stuff on the Libs is, you know, is still viable. I think it, you know, the longer it goes on, the less you can do that. But certainly, you know, a couple of months into your prime ministership, it's pretty easy. And then the second part is, it is a slow motion problem.
Train wreck.
Yeah, in that people's you've got this sort of timing issue in terms of people usually get higher bills in wintertime because they've got to pay up for heating, and so we're getting some of the price rises coming through in winter, but not all of them, and so you are getting higher bills, and then what's going to happen is we'll hit spring and people won't need as much heating, so we're only, you know, a month away from hitting spring, and people won't need as much heating, but probably your bills, which might, sort of might go up and then down and then up again, once you start need to start cooling your houses, might not fall as much. So they might not, yeah, they won't fall as far as they usually do. But it might not be as hidden. You know, I'm used to I've just had a $200 gas bill or heating bill, and now it's fallen back to 180 in spring, whereas it should have fallen back to 100. But I haven't really noticed because it's still lower than the winter peak and then the summer. So you might actually, you know, it could be some time before people really start to feel the pain and you actually start to see some sort of eye-opening, shocking bills.
Well, like this. Well, I hope they don't wait until the bills arrive because then it'll be too late.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess there is that issue that it's a problem, but if for the purely political, yeah, they might be able to see it as a... Yes, it's a problem, but it's a problem with blame on the last guys. So, you know, let's deal with other ones. Come back to this one. You know, wait till the frog's dead, rather than sort of the slowly boiling frog at the moment. So yeah.
Yes. So other asset markets. I mean, assuming a semi decent outcome, I think. The interest rate outlook in our bond markets is still pretty aggressive. And so if we get a decent outlook, I would expect there's some scope bond upside, that is falling yields, especially at the long end. Especially at the long end, again, is very influenced by international trends as well. So that's only a snapshot of the possible outcome. It would certainly influence that. Towards bond gains, but you know, there are other very large factors. If we get the reasonable outcome, then there's some pressure off housing as well. I think basically the RBA it will be done if the Albanese government acts on this, and the more aggressive it is, the more done the RBA is. They may not get there in time for the next rate hike, which probably is another 50, but I would absolutely think that will be the last hike if Albo acts. If not, then, you know, some of the pricing we've seen in rate forwards markets that you know, is pretty preposterous for the underlying debt structure of the economy may actually come to fruition, which would be pretty catastrophic for 2023. And house prices will be smashed.
Yeah. And keeping in mind that, you know, we have so much of the population will be rolling off their fixed term 3-year rates into next year, and rather than rolling off at 2% higher and basically doubling their interest bill payments, they might be, you know, it might be up 2.5 times or 3 times because
three times. That's right.
Yeah, if the rate rises keep going. So yeah, so this is as Dave was saying, this is your number one economic issue, and in the end, it comes down to a decision made in a room with a bunch of politicians. You know, it's pretty hard to make a concise, sorry, a yes. a convicted view in either direction.
Well, it's a group of politicians, some of the cheapest politicians in the world, in a room with their donors, in fact. So yeah. that makes it even more complex and unsettling.
Yeah. Well, because I mean, I think both parties sort of got sub $1 million, didn't they? Like they were one of the biggest donors. Like both parties, the gas cartel was, not that they're officially a cartel, but you know, I guess the ACCC.
Well, I think they are officially a cartel now. I mean, that word seems to be bandied about post ACCC report.
Yeah, it's did everything but name them as a cartel. But I guess their net donations were sort of sub $1 million, which still made them one of the biggest donors. But it's pretty cheap price to extract
like
billions of dollars of $800,000 or $900,000 a year on political donations, hire a few ex-pollies to sit on your board and stuff like that, and you're away.
Well, if I mean, between gas and coal and electricity, it was something like a $50 billion shock with prices, you know, where they were a few weeks ago. So spending $1 million is a pretty good investment. Pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
ROI there. So so I'd also expect the Australian dollar to come up, as I mentioned earlier, upwards pressure at the worst possible moment if they don't resolve this. So it's all ASIC markets are in the mix. And as I've said all along, you cannot allow this level of volatility and corruption into your energy mix. Like, energy markets are simply the base input into just about bloody everything. And if you allow them to be corrupted and become volatile like this, then you really are just asking for an entire world of economic trouble. So on that basis, you know, my hope is that, and there's some evidence for a decent outcome from the Albanese government, even if it's not as strong as it should be. So I'd probably leave it there, Damo.
Yes. Okay, guys. So what we've got now, we've got the viewer question of the week. So just load that slide up. Okay, so the question, this is for viewers to have some discussion in the comments section over the coming days. So the question for this week is, will Albo make changes or is the Labor Party too scared of the energy sector? So feel free to post your thoughts and engage with us and some of our viewers over the coming days. So that almost wraps us up. A bit of a quick one this week. So just want to thank you very much, Dave and Damien, for sharing your expert insights.
Thanks, Sam.
Great. Thanks, Sam.
Awesome. So we do welcome your feedback on this podcast, especially in regards to future topics. So if you do have any ideas, please drop it in the comment section below or send us an email at contact@nuclearswealth.com. Just a reminder, this is general advice and does not take into account your personal situation. If you do want to discuss your personal financial situation, please go to our website at nuclearswealth.com/contact and you can book a call with me or one of the team. Don't forget to like the video now. And if you got some value out of today's episode, we'd really appreciate it if you please can share it with them. And also, if you'd like to see more of our previous episodes and content, head over to nuclearswealth.com/content. And to stay up to date with us, you can follow us on all major social media. So for myself, Damien, and the rest of the team at Nuclear Wealth, thanks for watching, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Bye for now.